All right, can you hear me?
Yep.
Awesome, we're live. How's it going today, Zach?
Not so bad. How about yourself, Silos?
I am doing great. It's been a busy day, busy week. I'm going insane. But, hey, that's how it works sometimes when you're a hustler, right?
Yep.
Very true.
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, as much as you like. You don't have to tell us, or you can tell us whatever you'd like to say, but go ahead and kind of introduce yourself a little bit.
All right, well, I'm white. I think that's the first thing I'll say. I'm Catholic, very Catholic. Yes, I love Catholicism. I'm 18 years old. I study a lot of different cultures and assortment things like that, and I like to think, you know. So I was listening to your podcast, actually, swipe up on your Snapchat, and started watching it, and you were talking about your subconscious, and I was very interested in that, and wanted to possibly maybe go in more depth about that topic.
Yeah, so what was the specific topic that I was talking about? I want to make sure I get the right day in mind.
Right. So you were talking about how we subconsciously process so many things, like trillions of calculations, like instantly. But then consciously we can only do one. And
isn't that fascinating?
And you were driving, I can subconsciously drive and talk at the same time. I'm not really paying attention to the road, but I can talk and be fine because I'm paying attention subconsciously. Not really focusing. I just thought that was interesting. Then you brought it into morality and stuff, and how we can subconsciously have our morals, it was the idea to subconsciously take our morals into effect like that.
Yeah, it's actually, I was talking about this a little bit today with my best friend, and so he's an abbe with the Institute of Christ King, and he was pointing out to me that he thought, maybe my reasoning was kind of lacking the element of God, which I explained to him, I don't really think that's the case, because whenever I think about this, I don't think about these as, oh yeah, this is us, these are what we have. I think this is what we have because God gave it to us. These are gifts and skills that he gave to every human who believes that they can accomplish these things. So, why don't you go ahead and just start off with some of your questions, because I know you said you had a couple, so we can just get the conversation rolling.
Absolutely. So, I guess here's a question for you. Subconsciously, with the subconscious, you believe that we can put our, put our acts of kindness and charity, holding the door open for someone, make that second nature. I guess you just kind of explained a little bit about that. But at the same time, I don't know if I would talk about that is just doing things to apply, whether it's just it sounds a lot to me just kind of forming the conscience. You know what I'm saying? Because personality and stuff like that, we come up with depending on how we're raised and things like morality, how we behave.
Yeah, so I think that it's a difficult topic because. So some people will say that your personality is going to be your personality no matter what. However, some people will disagree and say that you can change traits of your personality, negative traits. Because, we all know of or we know personally people who have, maybe in the past they were really just terrible people and just hard to be around and hard to talk to. But they had a conversion of heart and they changed. So maybe their personality didn't change. Maybe they just changed the good things they're doing. That's kind of its own topic. But what I believe is that anything is changeable. So the reason why it exists in the first place is in for the most part, from the research I know and the people I've talked with who are more knowledgeable in this than I am, they say that most of our belief systems are formed before the age of five. So obviously if you have a really like rough childhood at that age, that's going to be a major factor of what you believe. Okay. Now we don't actively think, okay, this equals that. It just subconsciously gets put into the shelf of, okay, when this situation happens, this is how you react. And it's kind of like pressing a button on a computer, you know, and then it creates, it reacts by doing this certain action, right? So, you know, let's use the keyboard, for example. When you click on the G key on the keyboard, it's going to type in G. But what I'm trying to suggest is that we can change that so that when you click on G, it actually does, you know, T instead. So I do think personality can be changed and then traits can be changed. But as far as like morality is concerned, I believe that morality involves, so it's hard to quantify exactly because it's an idea that, okay, in this situation, like there's basic principles for the situation, right? I'm going to act a certain way because every situation is going to be slightly different. Now, ways that for me personally, so obviously I've been raised Catholic. I've always been what I would consider a very devout Catholic. I don't think I can say that I've ever doubted my faith at all. I've always questioned to make sure that, like, you know, is this correct? I just question things a lot because I want to understand it and just not just go along with it. So let's say, for example, I was raised this way, and then you get to a certain point in life, and you're like, okay, I have been taught to act, this way. But now I'm actually faced with one of those situations. Before, it was all hypothetical. Now I'm in a situation where I have to still choose to act that way that I was taught. So it's the implementation, right? And so far, I've almost always erred, you know, in that way that I was taught. But there's certain things that I was taught that weren't necessarily Catholic that were just like, okay, this is how we do things, that I've changed about myself. So, I mean, why don't I get your feedback on what I've said so far? Because I've talked a little bit here, went out for a bit.
So I have a question about morality. I know that in the world today, there's a whole big conversation about relativism, relative morality. What do you think about relative morality?
I think morality is not subjective. I think morality is a hard truth because, in my opinion, morality is all based off of the natural law. And that's all the reasoning I've ever come to is, you know, with certain things like, let's say, for example, you know, it's not an easy topic to talk about, but let's say, for example, contraception. So the reason why it's immoral is because if you look at the science, so maybe on the surface, people don't know anything and they're just, you know, ignorant about certain things. But once you realize what the science is going on, that it's actually, in almost every case, it's actually an abortion at a very early age or a very early stage of the pregnancy. So therefore, it's murder because you're intentionally eradicating or getting rid of a life. So therefore, it's immoral, right? And a lot of people will probably try to argue some other form of science to that, but that's just what we as Catholics know. Like, we know, okay, this doesn't work. And there's other things that are more difficult to explain. But I would say that morality is there is no changing it because it can't be relative. Because if it was relative, then somebody who grew up, you know, with say somebody grows up in a war zone and there's constantly killing around them, you know, just murder on the streets all the time because it's a war zone. That person might have a tendency to think it's okay to just kill someone if they make them upset. Maybe they've seen it a lot of times. So it's conditioning. But overall, it doesn't make it correct, right? Just because they believe it's fine doesn't mean it's right because it's against the natural law. We all know that human life is sacred, and that's just evident in in my opinion, I guess there's, it's hard to quantify it, but in my opinion, it's just evident in all of our subconsciouses. Like, that's how we were wired, if that makes sense.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I would add to that, too, and say that, like, with subjective morality, I mean, you know, people, they expect a lot of things to just, like, that. I think that's where a lot of it comes from, is that people feel entitled to certain privileges and stuff like that. Like, and so, honestly, if you look at most cases, like, when somebody goes against natural law and, like, talks about relative morality, that, like, that would, like, system of morals that goes against what we believe, it's always a self-seeking purpose. Like, it's never something that's beneficial for others. I mean, people would talk about, like, contraception and abortions, like, those are, you know, for the women and everything. And, I mean, that's great. Like, you know, women have rights and everything like that, too. And, like, you know, that's wonderful. But, I mean, at the same time, it's a selfish reason, you know? I mean,
yeah, because it oversteps their boundaries.
Yeah.
As it oversteps their boundaries, because it's not only affecting their life, they're interjecting. So that's always, I mean, the topic of the American kind of law system that we have is everything is fine until it breaches somebody else's freedom. If it's infringing on somebody else's freedom, that's when the problem is. So that's based on the law of morality, that you can't take this life, because obviously as Catholics, we would say, God ordained that life to be, and you're going directly in defiance of his will.
Exactly. And they like if you look at, like, through time and everything, I mean, I don't know how much you study it, but I mean, the argument has changed over time as well. As we've moved towards, like, they, at first, they admitted what they were doing, but then, like, the 60s came around, and it became a question of, well, how do we even know that it's alive? You know, which I think is one of the stupidest arguments ever. But at the same time, we talk about life being a point of consciousness instead of, like, I don't know, conception, like, it's,
Yeah, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to come up with a new definition for what alive is. It's just like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense, because we know that it's simply, if there's living, like, if it's its own DNA, it's living, right? It's very simple. We even call different bacteria, like, to a degree, they are living because they're alive. But people want to make that, oh, yeah, because it doesn't have consciousness, it doesn't matter. But the biggest argument that I love to use against that is Ben Shapiro's argument, which is, if you knew that somebody went into a coma, a friend of yours, and you know there's like a really high chance that in 9 months they're going to be coming out of that coma, you're going to kill them. And a lot of times people are like, well, heck no. But the point is, that's the same thing. Like, 99, well, I don't know what the percentage exactly is, but almost all the time, when somebody is conceived, unless there's a miscarriage, they will become a conscious human being.
Right.
So, and, I don't know. I guess, yeah, go ahead.
It also fascinates me, your argument of, like, you look at people, like, say people, like, study space and stuff like that. If we found, like, just the smallest trace of bacteria on, like, Mars or the moon, we'd all be like, it's life, like, you know, like, and we'd all lose our shit for it. But it just amazes me how that's the idea of all these scientists and everything who build the same concrete platform for their own argument about abortion and whether or not fetuses are living.
Yeah, and I think that it comes down to, like you said, it's just all selfish. It's a selfish act, right? They don't want to take the consequences of it. And what I would obviously argue is that the only reason we have this issue, that people are thinking that, oh, you know, this is such an inconvenience to me. Like, this baby that I've conceived is such an inconvenience. It's like, the only reason we got there is because the school system, or whoever you want to say, society, started to teach that it's okay to to be sexually active and not have consequences. Like, there's quote unquote, as they call it, ways around it, and it's like, no, that's not how it works. This is a special act ordained by God, and that's how it's supposed to be in His context. It's not for you.
So then, how would you also handle? Because I know this is a very common argument too, and I think you already know what question is coming. In circumstances of rape, how would you handle that?
So the biggest reason why people don't want to accept that is definitely included in conception is because most people don't have a belief in divine providence. Now, obviously, as Catholics, we believe that if something happens, like if God allows something to happen, it may not be like something that was good that He wanted to happen, but good can come out of it. We know this from, for example, the popes who had children. You know, I don't remember which saint it was. If you know, you feel free to shout it out. There's a saint who was the grandson or something like that of one of the popes. And obviously, so that's completely like against our laws and our rules as Catholics, but there was a good thing that came out of it. Now, it's obviously a difficult situation because it's just a terrible act of passion, I guess you could say. And I would say that obviously it's hard to put myself in that situation, but if I were in that situation, I would say, okay, well, it's God's will that this is this way, because the chances, I mean, we all know that the percentage of children conceived in rape is extremely low. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, because we know it does, but the point is it's so low that if it does happen, it's okay, well, you know, this is God's will. And we also know that, I don't know the exact research behind it, but I do know that most women will feel a large sense of healing when they, you know, bear that pregnancy to fruition and they have that child, even though the argument seems, okay, you know, it seems like, how could you face that child? Like, it's a constant reminder their whole life that you were raped and that you were treated that way. But I think that God created it in a way that, because we all know that, obviously, pregnancy is, like, super painful. But every single woman, as soon as she's done with that pregnancy, would turn around and say, she would do it right again just now, because it's just such an amazing feeling to be able to hold that child in your arms. And life is so precious. And God created that in us for a reason. So, obviously, it's not an easy answer, but the answer is still that life was created by an act of God. God was part of that act because He's the one who endows the child with a soul, and it's intended to come to life. You know, there's plenty of good things that can come out of it.
Yeah, I would agree with you there too. It's definitely like when people ask me that question, you know, I always say that it's a very unfortunate thing to have happened to anyone, but at the same time, you know, you can't really put the blame or ignore the fact that there is a life, you know, that is being purged out of this. And I always talk about, you know, the punish, like the guy, you know, or the guy should be like, you know, I believe in the death penalty for some things. And if there's something like that, I would definitely, you know, the worst possible punishment, because it's just such a unruly and ungodly thing to do. Somebody told me one time, they were like, if they believe that anybody who rapes people, like they deserve to be raped. And I'm like, I don't know about that.
I don't think so. You can't make a good out of more evil. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something. So, you know, along the discussion of, so it's actually interesting. A while ago, so I go to these things called Leading with Power, and it's mostly Christian men, but it's this organization that it's a group for men to hear a speaker and kind of like just bond and become better leaders and better men in general. And then this one guy who spoke I think it was 3 months ago. He was a drug addict for most of his life, spent a lot of his life in jail, and just like really, really bad life overall. And he brought up something that was extremely controversial in the meeting or in the conference, which was, you know, everybody deserves to be loved by Jesus because like he died for everybody. And obviously this is coming from his Christian perspective, so it's slightly different than yours and mine. But the point is like, even for Margaret Mary, Magdalene Mary, she was this person who had the terrible lifestyle, but still Jesus said, okay, like, come out of that. So then he made the argument that anybody who, like, even if, because there's obviously all men in the room, he's like, if your daughter was raped, you're going to want to go kill that man, whoever that was. But you can't do that. You have to show them, you know, that because they deserve a second chance to come to Jesus, right? Obviously. So what would you say about that?
I would disagree because we also have the right to protect. We also have an obligation to protect in that same way. Yes, there's an obligation to, as Catholics, you know, to, like, we want to evangelize and everything, and I believe in counseling and stuff like that. But at the same time, you have the responsibility of something like that, and I think that it makes a statement as well to other people, like, this is what happens when this happens. And I mean,
see, I actually,
you know, I believe in giving them, like, you know, like giving them the chance to, like, renew themselves. But at the same time, I think there's just some things in this life that you do it, and then it, like you gotta talk to God.
I actually do agree with you on that. I just brought up the point because I wanted to hear what you thought, because I think that there's certain, like you said, there's certain acts that if you do that, if you commit that act, there's clearly something wrong in some way, right? You either don't value the people around you, you don't value life, or, you know, maybe you are just, who knows, potentially the person is mentally ill of some sort. And I'm not trying to say, oh yeah, we have to go kill mentally ill people. No, I'm just trying to say we have to protect people. Okay, I believe, I actually have this, I don't know if you heard my other podcast, but I believe that almost every person who is alive has some sort of mental roadblock / illness. I don't know what you would, like, to me, mental illness is much more broad than what most people use it as. Because,
yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, I would even argue that there's many things, because of the way I was raised, there are many things that I view in a way different, skewed perspective. That could be skewed positively or skewed negatively. But it's skewed because of the way I was raised. And that's all in my head, right? It has nothing to do with my physical, you know, it has nothing to do with physically. It's just all about my mental perspective on things. So what I'm trying to say is that if there are certain people, they have committed these acts, essentially in my mind, they have surrendered their right to life because they've gone beyond what the limits are, right? And I would agree with that. People who have been massacres, and I'm not entirely sure what my stance would be on the punishments for rapes, but I definitely, it's pretty bad. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I guess the way that I view it,
the way that, like, the family is set up traditionally and everything, you know, like, the man is the protector. And so when he's desecrating something that he's technically in charge of protecting, you know, and that's a responsibility that he's neglecting as, like, a man. And especially for something as self-seeking, as selfish as that, I mean, you're literally, like, using everything at the, like, it's everywhere. There's nothing, you know, good coming out of this except on your end. And, I believe that, like, I do believe in the death penalty, and I do believe that you do something like that, and, like, you know, it's over.
Yeah, see, that's actually
how do we allow that to, like, what kind of message do we send when we say, okay, like, we can forgive that, just don't do it again, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is a line that has to be drawn, obviously, I understand that. But I think that point that you brought up is interesting, that men are the protectors. And that's something that, so obviously we live in a society that has a lot of, you know, incorrect, at least I would say, very like unhealthy ideas and beliefs. And I think one of those is and I think it's on both sides of the table, because I believe that there's a lot of Catholics who have an incorrect perspective on how things are or should be. Like, really, I would say there's a lot of traditional Catholics that may kind of go too far, and then there's a lot of obviously secular people that go too far. And that is, men are supposed to be they're supposed to die to themselves as Christ died to the church. Now, I listened to this one book once that was very interesting to me. And it was about, it was by a Christian author. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I don't remember the name of it, but I do remember that it was a very Catholic book in nature, because what it says, this guy has done counseling for couples for a very long time, and the woman always wants good things, almost 100% of the time. She only asks questions and only wants, like when she's asking for something from her husband, it's only for good reasons. It's like she has this inability to want negative things, or she has this inability to not speak up for what should be done, like the good things. And I think that goes back to the way we were created, because obviously God created Adam and then he created Eve to be his partner and to help keep him. But we, of course, the garden, we fell. But it's the sin of Adam. It's not the sin of Eve. Like, Adam was the one who dropped the ball. And I just think that that's something that most men are not willing to – they'll make excuses now and say, oh, you know, women are just rude to us and they won't let us be nice to them. But in all honesty, how many men actually have completely innocent mindsets and innocent – motives behind why they do things, you know what I mean?
That's very true, too.
I'm one of the people who I would say I typically am very willing to take the blame for. The reason why women felt like they had to step up and essentially become these leaders is because men weren't doing it correctly. They weren't following the calling that God gave them.
So you don't think that, like, it's a feminist movement and everything, you don't think that's incorrect because you think that they're just stepping up to pick up where men are slacking off?
I think that it developed because men slacked off. I don't think, like, I don't hold anything against those women. I do hold things against the women who are very, very, like, violent about it. And it's like, even when men do decide to change, which... I'll be honest, it's very difficult because, generally speaking, men are selfish. But when there are good people out there, like, I struggle with this for relationships and stuff. Like, if there's a girl that I like, and there's a lot of times where there's this ideology that is presented to her that there is no good men out there, so therefore they're gonna second-guess everything I do because they're just trying not to be hurt. So it's just a survival tactic. It's not like they're doing it because they actually are, like, mean, they're trying to be mean, or they believe that they should be charged. They're just doing it because they want to protect themselves, and there's nothing wrong with that, because we all have instincts.
So what would you say some of the survival instincts are that men have?
What was that?
What would you say some of the survival instincts are that men have?
So I would say that overall...
In society?
So that's a hard question. I never really thought about that before. Survival instincts that men have. So it would probably... I think what I would say is this much, that there is a commonality... And it's the lowest form of, like, our thinking, you know. Some people, obviously evolutionists, will say, yeah, it's the caveman version of you. But obviously we don't agree with that. I would say that both men and women have this low kind of, because we have the different types of souls. I don't know, like, when I remember from catechism growing up is that every living object has a soul, including plants. They just have different kinds of souls. They have a vegetative soul, instinctual soul for animals, and then intellectual for humans. So they have the intellectual, but they also have all of the below qualities. So vegetative is one of those, and survival, you know, slash instinct is one of those as well. So I think that it's just when you're put in very tough situations in general, and when you feel like you cannot trust people, you're going to react, you know, in a fight, flight, or freeze manner. So you could make the argument that men are trying to, they're kind of retreating into laziness or making excuses because the women are being, you know, they're saying, oh yeah, you're such a terrible person. But I don't believe that that's ever correct, because I think that they have a duty to admit, okay, yeah, I understand, like, we're all falling, like, right now society is pretty bad, men don't really lead very well. Now it's an uphill battle for me to win this person's trust or this group of people's trust. And I believe the responsibility falls on them, because otherwise it wouldn't be called the sin of Adam. It would be called the sin of Adam and Eve.
Right.
So I don't know if I answered your question, but I gave you my best answer.
I would say that, like, I guess I was thinking about it as you were saying it, in a simpler form and much more broken down, I would say that they have their protective instinct still, which is why we, and, you know, their desire to provide, I think it just gets distorted with human nature, and how, like, human nature is so distorted that sometimes it just becomes self-seeking. But if you look at, like, leaders and stuff, I mean, Hitler and everything like that, you know, what were they trying to do except, provide, you know, in one way or another for themselves,
yeah,
or for their country?
That makes sense. I mean, I guess it comes down to that there may be, so say, for example, Hitler, like, maybe he was trying to genuinely provide for his country, but he was so, you know, I guess, messed up distorted on his goal. And I would say that it wouldn't be necessarily that it was the specific goal that he was distorted on. It had to be something else earlier in his childhood, something that changed the value he put on life. It could have been a conversation he had as a young man. It could have been many things that made him, you know, just not realize the benefit. Now, there's also a lot of arguments that people will say, yeah, the things that happened in the concentration camps weren't actually as bad as we're told. I'm kind of in the middle on that one, because it's very, very unpopular. For me to say this is very unpopular, but I do believe that there were concentration camps. I know there were concentration camps, or like work camps, in every you know, every person in the war, every country in the war had them. But obviously the situation was just, it's just a terrible place, because Germany lacked resources to feed them. They were work camps. It's just prisoner of war camps. Like, the fact that they didn't just kill them all in the first place before they got there shows that they still respected the rules of war somewhat. But I guess, so back to the original point is, you know, he was just trying to provide for his country to a survival extent that he just went over, you know, and crossed the line, essentially. But yeah, I mean, that may be why a lot of men are, they just drive to be successful. But you can see it that even in, like, broken families, where, say, for example, you have a really successful person, a successful father, right? I would say that there's a lot of times where those people come from a family that the father and or, you know, mother were, like, very lazy, or they just didn't care a lot, so they work really hard. And I have a number of friends whose parents, specifically their dad, work so much that they really almost never see them. But they have lots of money. They live in a nice house.
Right.
I think that's what you're getting at, is that they work so hard because deep down we have that instinct to provide. And it just gets distorted sometimes that we realize, okay, we're providing way more than we need, but we're still going, you know, like we're still pursuing that next job that's going to take more time and so on and so forth.
Right, and I think that's part of capitalism is because we are like the American dream and everything, you know, you're given this idea that you need to do better, you know. I mean, like, we're very uncontent with our lifestyles. I mean, honestly, somebody who makes, like, $60,000 a year, you know, living in, like, middle-class subdivisions and stuff like that, suburbia, and you see, like, they work until, like, they get raises, and then when they get the raise, you know what happens? They don't just, like, have more to provide. They get a bigger house, right? So, I mean, they have more to provide, but, like, they don't have any more money.
Correct.
Because they improve their, they increase their quality of life with the thing, because that's how it works, so how we have it set. We work ourselves to our own demise.
Yeah, I mean, because at what point is increasing quality of life actually decreasing quality of life? Because if you have to maintain all those things and keep all those things up, like, is it really much more quality? And I think that you have that definitely right. Is that, and I would argue, so this is going to be obviously unpopular with marketers, but I love marketing. But I would say that it's marketers who have created that, because they needed to create a sense of urgency in these people to go out and buy these products. And that was just what we had through the industrial society. I think we actually are coming around, in my opinion, that because I think that money was essentially the measurement of everything for so long, and it still is. I'm not going to say it's gone, but I'd say that especially in younger people, there's a lot of younger people who are realizing, yeah, money is not the measure of it. It's work-life balance, for example, or friends, or, you know, how often you can go to the mountains and hike, you know what I mean? So I think it all has its cycles, and I would argue that that money is never going to completely go away as the quote-unquote standard, because capitalism, that's just, it's kind of its own worst enemy. But I do think that to a degree, a lot of people are realizing, yeah, family and relationships and people and experiences are more valuable than money.
You ever notice that too, like with the age gaps in society as well, like boomers and stuff like that, you know, they're all these hardworking, very hardworking people, you know, they all bought, like, at least the boomers I've known, and they've all bought these very expensive, like, $50,000 trucks, like, after they've turned, like, almost 50, almost 60 years old now. And, like, that's, like, that, like, if you're a boomer with a truck, you're, like, similar to somebody who, like, did good, you know?
Yeah,
and,
that's true. I never thought about that. There's a lot of boomers I know that have nice pickup trucks.
Right. And so, something that I've, like, I hear them, because I work in customer service right now. I talk to hundreds of people a day, you know, like all sorts. And every time, like, whenever there's a boomer, because I'm 18 years old, they always talk to me. They're like, you going to school? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to school. And they're like, just make sure you do something you love. Like, that's just something I hear so much from them.
Like, from who?
Boomers. Like, they always, like, if their advice is, like, make sure you do something you love. Like, they're never pushing me to, like, go be a doctor or something like that, you know. But then there's these businessmen and stuff like that, and, you know, like, they do. Like, they always talk about, like, jobs. Like, well, what are you going to school for? Right? What is that? And, you know, they want to know about, and if I tell them, like, because I don't really know what I'm going to school for at this point. And they're like, well, make sure it's something useful. Like, there's, like, you know, they're smart in that way, in, like, the sense of, like, efficiency and making sure you have jobs so you don't just drown yourself in debt. But I just think it's interesting because it's almost like they have a sense, like the boomers almost have a sense of regret that they spent so much time working.
Yeah, it's true, because they're at the end of their life now and they're thinking, man, what did I really gain? Like, what did I accomplish, you know? I mean, I can see it if you, you know, if you built a company and you employed hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe even thousands because of the business you built, and you lived a life of good example, and you lived by, like, you only spent on yourself what you needed to have a, you know, a regular lifestyle, and the rest of it was donated to the church or to charities or to, you know, whatever.
I think that's something we could talk about too.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I really like, and that's my whole goal is to start this thing called the Catholic Businessman, which I know is, I realize it's technically, quote-unquote, sexist, because it says businessman and not businesswoman. But the idea is that, so my first major mentor in life, in business and everything, was my first boss when I moved to Wausau. I had my first like job besides working for my dad growing up. And he was extremely successful. He started his company with $300 and ultimately sold it for a lot of money. I won't say how much because we're, you know, recording this. I don't know if he wants that well known, but he sold it for a lot of money. And what he did with that money was he set up a trust, I believe, for his kids, one for the church that I go to actually. And he paid for the renovations of the entire church. So instead of it just being, you know, like a typical 50s-style modern church, it's now a high Gothic-style church, and I think it's the only one in North America of high Gothic architecture. Now,
that's incredible.
It is incredible. What would life be like for all of these good Catholics that are surrounding and coming to this community now? Their kids are being educated. They're finding other like-minded people that they can grow together with and have friendship and all of these, this community. But what would have happened if he had not done that? If he had not been able to invite the Institute of Christ the King here because of the renovations, et cetera. I mean, I'm pretty sure this church was going to be destroyed. Even though he would say that if he were to tell his story, he would say, you know, I definitely didn't live the kind of life that I wish I would have while I was a businessman. My question is, why not have a lot of people, or why not more men at least, you know, men, women too, I mean, if they feel called to this, if they have the skills that God gave them, become monetarily successful, because I don't like using success in combination with the monetary success. So I think there's a difference, but becoming successful in the eyes of the world, but then using all that extra money to give back to the church and to, you know, to help the people around you.
Yeah. I mean, also like really, cause like I was saying earlier, you know, I mean, like, you can spend as much money as you want to on yourself. You know, and a lot of people spend more money than they have. And, yeah, it's like, what does it ultimately get you? I mean, because it's all temporary, right? So you want to make something that lasts. And, I mean, it's fine building wealth for your family and everything. I'm not trying to, like, hate on that. But at the same time, like, I just feel like it becomes too much of a priority when there's so much need in the world. Like, I just feel like that we're very excessive needing our own wants. I mean, I don't think every kid needs, like, 4 game consoles and, like, you know, like, you see in all these families and everything. Like, every kid, they have, like, 4 game consoles, or, like, you know, everyone has, like, an iPhone, or everybody has, like a nice car. And, like, I mean, it's different to, like, put money aside for, like, college and things like that. But, like, when you have all these, like, things, and then you look back into, and I'm guilty of this myself, because, I mean, I cannot complain with my setup. But, you know, I think about it often. I'm like, you know, there's kids in Africa, or, like, there's, you know, there's kids even, like, in our own community, and there's homeless in our own community. Like just they don't even have, like, the basics that we call essentials.
Yeah, and you're saying
the essentials that we call basics.
Oh, yeah. So I do think that, so this is something that I believe is over, basically I would summarize it to, there's a lot of people who would call themselves good Catholics, but they use the excuse of humility and littleness, and it's false humility, obviously, to justify the fact that they don't actually try hard in life, and they don't actually, like, get a job that pays well. Because there's plenty, I mean, I'm going to be honest, there are so many jobs in so many ways, people can make very decent and sometimes even extremely really good incomes for their family while still having an amazing lifestyle where they can spend time with their family, go to church every day, go to mass every day. Like, I know a good friend of mine who is the CMO of a company in Detroit. He goes to daily mass. Almost every day he goes to mass, and he's still the CMO of this company. Like, the point is, why are more men and why are more people just not doing this and then having this extra income? Because his goal is to take that money and he's going to invest it back into the community around the church. Like, it's just insanity that most people are so willing to claim that, basically they claim that they're weak and that they can't do it, which obviously we all can't do anything without God, but I don't like it when people use it as an excuse, you know, it's because, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Use it as an excuse for what?
They use the idea of, you know, not being quote-unquote in the world and being humble as an excuse to be extremely poor.
Okay, so, like, they use it as an excuse, like, they can't see themselves living in that lifestyle because they have too high of expectations.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm trying to say is they have the capabilities of becoming, of making more money and having a successful lifestyle, whether they could potentially,
okay.
But they're content to make the bare minimum to provide for their family. Like, I mean, I'm talking bare minimum. I know a number of families who they have a lot of kids and they get by, but it is barely, like, they barely have enough money. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to retire that kind of, like, just, I wouldn't call it laziness because they do work hard. But I just think that a lot of people use that as an excuse.
I understand what you're saying now, yeah. They become content with their lifestyle and they don't really push themselves to go out of it. They don't want to take advantage of the opportunity that America provides them with.
Yeah,
that's a tough one because, I mean, you know, maybe sometimes they just, maybe they're working so hard and they're stressed out about, like, being at the bare minimum. Like, they're just stressed out about, like, actually being able to make it, that they just don't have time to, like, seek for those opportunities. They should be making more so they can give back. Because
yeah,
if you're
absolutely.
Just making what you make for yourself, then you should lower yourself even more. But when you have a family, it's hard, so you just need to work more. But working more is not the answer. It's, you know.
Correct. And I guess from my professional experience, most of these people, to get a better job, all they have to do is ask somebody else who knows people. And they're going to be like, oh, yeah, I heard about this company that is hiring. The hours are great. Pay is amazing. And they would instantly add, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 to their income just by switching jobs because they asked somebody who knew somebody.
That's wild. I should have a kind of I don't know if it's a pride thing that they're with, like where they don't want to admit to other people where they are, or are they even admitting it? Like in those
maybe styles, I mean, that's a good argument because I know that there's a lot of people who actually it's very, to me it's very interesting and it's kind of very it's ironic that there's a lot of people I know who they pride themselves in being poor / humble. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, we're so poor, we're humble. But they're so proud of it. They're like, yeah, I am dirt poor. What did you do? What did you eat for breakfast? You know, it's like, that's not humility, guys. That's definitely not humility. And I just think it's funny because, I don't know, I think most of the problems in the world, honestly, could be fixed if people spent 5 to 10 minutes a day just reflecting on their thoughts and their actions. Honestly, I swear, if people took 5 or 10 minutes just to write down, you know, the events of the day, 90% of the problems of the world would be solved.
Yeah, for real.
It's such a simple tactic. You know, I think that's I mean, so a lot of people, obviously, so I have a lot of Protestant and Christian friends, and we argue often about confession. And I just think that there's, so obviously there's some, you know, there's some lack of knowledge that kind of leads them to be afraid of the idea of confession entirely. But they're always like, oh, yeah, like, why would I confess to a priest or to some other guy when I could just confess directly to God? They're like, okay, but are you really going to do that? And I think that, so, I don't know, I guess I just think that it's such a low requirement. Like, it's like, obviously, the way the church, the minimum, the requirement is to go to confession once a year. And I think that that's just essentially there. Like, one of the things, like, one of the reasons why they have it at them, but then it requires you to at least reflect on your, like, your life at least once a year. And obviously that's really, like, super low. Most, you know, most priests would probably say, you know, you want to go to confession, like, once a month or something like that. And that's obviously a good, like, that's a good time-ish. You know, some people go every week. I know people who go way too often, to be honest, but I think that it comes down to that idea of self-reflection and how important it is.
Yeah, confession is a hard one, especially to explain to our Protestant brothers and sisters, because, you know, it's something that they can't just, like, you can't just, like, point to it in the Bible. I mean, we have the verse where it's, like, receive the Holy Spirit, all the sins you have, all the sins you retain are retained, you know, all the sins you forgive are forgiven. Like, that's, like, it. Like, you look that, like,
yeah,
that's all the scriptural real evidence that you have. But I mean, like, it's enough for me. Like, it makes sense because, like, throughout any other sacrament in the church, I mean, but you see, you have to understand the sacraments also. They don't even understand those half the time.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't, they're like, oh, where does it say that you do this and this and this? And my biggest argument to them is always, it's not that. You have to realize that it all comes down to Jesus gave the power to, you know, make these, especially when you say, this is my favorite, what you said was my favorite thing to quote is, whatsoever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, whatsoever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Because to me, that is the essential moment where he said, okay, like, I understand you're human, you're going to make mistakes, and you might, you know, make rules and stuff that are kind of silly at times. But the point is, I will not let you falter because the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. So, like, you may make some things, you know, make some decisions that are kind of silly and they're pointless, but I'm still going to respect those. And for us as not leaders of the church, we're not priests, we're not bishops, we're not the Pope, we are supposed to just be obedient. Like, it's not our place to go around and question these things. Yeah, it's not our place, because when we do that, we take upon ourselves the responsibility of knowing everything there is to know about the faith and then making the decision. Whereas those are guidelines, in my opinion. They're set there because, like, we have to follow them. So they're not just guidelines. They're rules that we have to follow, but the reason they're rules we have to follow is because it's like, okay, if you stick to those rules, you should eventually in your life have a realization of the importance of your faith, and then you'll end up in the right place when you die. Because the reason I've come to that conclusion is, obviously, in past times, the laws weren't, okay, you have to go to church every Sunday, because a lot of people couldn't go to church every Sunday. And the holy days of obligation have changed. So in my opinion, it all comes down to the matter of obedience. We are only, what we, our responsibility is to be obedient. It's not to interpret for ourselves, because then it's going to be crazy. Like, we just have to be obedient to what's there and hope, you know, obviously, if we just are obedient, even if the laws given to us are incorrect, that's not our responsibility. It's the person who made the law.
Exactly. And, you know, that comes down to authority given to Peter and everything like that, you know, because it is our job to be obedient in that way. That's just a part of the church. But we also have a need, and, you know, there's needs, like, a spiritual need, and I believe that, like, there's a great failure and crisis, I'd say, of teaching in doctrine and, like, actually educating what we're, like, what the faith is about and everything. Because, I mean, I can even just tell you, like, with my confirmation class, even back in, like, seventh grade or something, you know, there was, like, 15 of us, and there's only maybe 3 of those kids who still practice their faith. Like, and they're receiving the sacrament of confirmation, not really knowing what they're doing. And
yeah,
it's a tragedy, really. But I just believe that the church needs to work.
See, I mean, and it is what it is. They make the rules, I guess. But I would even argue, because, like, for me personally, I understood, you know, logically speaking. Okay, I understood when I was getting confirmed what I was supposed to do. But I was, like, I wish I could have waited a few years before I was confirmed. Because I was confirmed when I was, like, 13 or 14. I don't remember exactly. And I definitely wish I could have waited a while longer. But I know that there's arguments that are made that, okay, well, you get these extra graces when you're confirmed. And, you know, maybe that's what's made the difference. Maybe that's what has made the difference so far in my life. But I know that I wish I could have waited a few more years because I didn't truly understand it. And I don't think I was living the life that I wish I was living at that time. You know, if I would go back, I would be able to change that, you know?
I do. And I would agree with you there because, I mean, it would have been a such more profound experience, you know, such more profound moment for me. It would have been so much more beautiful. Like, you know, I mean, you can't see that. I mean, baptize the baby. Yes, baptize the baby, please. But I think we do push confirmation too soon. I think we can push First Communion too soon in some cases.
Yeah, I would argue that as well.
I think
it's difficult. It's a difficult topic though because, I mean, I think so. You and I feel like we have a similar, like, understanding of our faith. Like, we actually realize the importance of it. And, like, we recognize, okay, like, this is legitimate. Like, I understand it. And we both have, I'm assuming, the same, like, okay, like, we really want to live for God. Because, like, when you give up and you literally completely let go of your life and then give it to God, life becomes so amazing. Like, it's free. It's okay. Like, obviously, it's a constant battle back and forth between that. But after you've experienced it once, like, your life is never going to be the same. And I think that moment comes at way different times for most people. So maybe you and I, maybe it came, you know, a couple years after we were confirmed, you know, say we're, you know, 15, 16, or whatever. But for a lot of people, that might not come until they're, you know, 90 years old, you know? And I think that that might be part of the reasoning is that you never know, so let's get them confirmed because maybe that grace will help. And I mean, it makes sense both ways to me. I guess it's just a difficult situation.
That's true. My grandmother, for instance, my great grandmother, she didn't enter the church until she was 98 years old. And 98. And then, like, you know,
nice.
I got to meet her too. She was 104 when I met her. She was on death.
How much was she? How old was she?
104. And I didn't know. I didn't know, like, that she was even Catholic or anything like that. But I found a rosary in her hospital. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is hers. Like, she's Catholic. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't miss that completely. But I just thought
nice.
It was such a beautiful thing to live that life because I mean, she was like with like motorcycle groups and everything like that growing up, and then even that into like her. Like, she's just kind of a great badass, like, of an old woman. But, I mean, like, when you look at it, like, you know, she comes to this truth so late in her life, you know, and, like, it was incredible. And she got to be baptized, receive the sacraments, First Communion, you know, confession, confirmation. It was just so cool. And also, like, when I shared that with, like, RCIA candidates, you know, like in Easter, you know, and they receive all the sacraments at the same time like that. It's just a beautiful thing. And I really feel like that they have such a great understanding of their faith, like, because they're choosing to enter into it. And, you know, it's made out like it's this big thing and it's a huge celebration. And I'm like, I don't know. Baptism, yes. Like I said, baptize the baby, let them be children of God like that. You know, I just want confirmation to be more of like an optional thing. You know, I mean, yes, the graces are important, but and like you know, I do understand why it's important to be confirmed. I'm not saying you should like
mm-hmm.
make it
Yeah.
either. I'm just saying like, if we improve our if we could improve the methods of teaching and education, you know, like show them that this is not something that they have to do, but something that they should do.
Yeah, I do agree with that, and I think that's a discussion. And I wouldn't doubt that the way things are right now are going to change. Like, in our lifetime, we're going to see changes with the way the church is run, I believe. I think, because obviously those things can change, right? The church never changes. It's always about living body of Christ. But the point is, like, the small circumstances on the outside are going to change, as we've seen in history, right? There used to be so many holidays of obligation, and it changes, right? And it's because nobody's perfect. Or we're all human. We learn. But, no, by the way, that's so cool that your grandma was 104, bro. I want to live to be 101, because if I do that, or sorry, yeah, 101. If I do that, I will have lived in 3 centuries.
That's crazy to think about.
Because I was born in 99, so, man, that'd be so cool. And I do believe, I think that goes back to the conversation we were having at the beginning, is the subconscious and willpower. Like, we're given a will, and we're given, like, these. I do believe that some of the main reason that people live to be a long time is because they have a will to live. Like, people who die early, most of the time, I believe it's because they really just, they don't care, like, like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm in so much pain. Like, it's about time that I go, you know. I don't want to have to be here anymore, you know.
Yeah.
But also comes down to getting sleep, which is an entirely different discussion. But anyways, man, well, we're at about an hour, so that was a pretty fun conversation. Is there any other questions you have that you wanted to, you know, kind of top things off with, or what are your thoughts, Jeff?
Nothing that I don't think that would lead to another further half hour. So,
yeah,
I think
that's typically.
I think this is very good, and I really appreciate ability to talk with you and stuff, and continue our conversation as well.
Absolutely.
In the future.
Yeah, for
right,
sure.
Well,
I appreciate you giving a listen at the beginning, and you know, and even listening to the podcast and asking the questions. And I encourage anybody else listening to do the same thing. If you guys want to be on the podcast, you have questions, want to chat. I love doing this stuff, and I like to talk about just about anything. So thank you guys so much. Thanks, Zach, and we'll see you guys later. God bless.